This is Norm Diamond. I'm with Luisa Martinez. We had planned to do a program together on the 50th anniversary of the coup against Allende in Chile that took place on September 11th. We did, the Old Mole did a program, of course, on that coup. But Luisa, as it turned out, was in Chile. What were you doing in Chile?
Hey, Norm. So I was in Santiago for the 50th anniversary because I had been invited. There's an organization called Progressive International, and they helped organize, along with the Chilean Communist Party, a 50th anniversary event that took place in Recoleta, which is a commune in Santiago.
Tell us about the event. Actually, I had the pleasure of tuning in, seeing you online. So I know the answers to these questions, but you spoke as part of a panel. What was the panel? And what did you say?
So it was part of a multi-day event. There was a series of events happening throughout Chile, but this is the one that it wasn't just Partido Comunista de Chile, but a number of other organizations had helped planned. It was a book fair, and there were a series of panels as well. And so the one that I spoke on was about the Monroe Doctrine. And I spoke along with alongside people like David Adler from Progressive International, who had invited me, Clara Lopez, who is a senator from Colombia and part of El Pacto. It's recently that was Gustavo Petro's coalition. Gerardo Torres Zelaya, who is, he's like the Minister of Foreign Affairs in Honduras. And so there's a couple other people who gave some comments as well, but that just gives you an idea.
And why the Monroe Doctrine?
I don't know. That was just the panel. That was just the theme of the panel. It wasn't something that I had picked.
No, but I'm asking the significance of the Monroe Doctrine, why they would have chosen it for this occasion, somehow connecting to the commemoration of the coup against Allende.
Right. I mean, it's generally a part of what happened in Chile is part of the long shadow that the U.S. government has cast on not just Latin America, but the global South. But the Monroe Doctrine was certainly fitting as a theme for the 50th anniversary of the coup.
So this is partly an anti-imperialist event. You made some interesting choices in how you spoke. I've also had the pleasure of seeing your speech reprinted, so it's available online if people go searching for it. But what was your thinking in deciding how you wanted to respond to the event?
So my comments were a little bit more personal than I think of a lot of the other panelists. They gave political analyses that were a little bit more removed than mine. So I'm Chilean. I was born in Chile. And we came to the United States when I was very young, and I was an undocumented immigrant for a long time. And so I gave my perspective as a formerly undocumented Chilean in the United States, but also the role that the coup has played in my own political development, and that it isn't actually very far removed from a lot of people on the left, right? I've heard, and there's no studies on these types of things, unfortunately, so I couldn't confirm this, but I've heard from many other people that the coup in Chile, right, Allende's death is one of the first things that they learn about when they learn about imperialism. And it's not because there's so many Chileans in the United States. I know that because you just don't meet a whole lot of them. And I grew up in South Florida, right? So a lot of big immigrant community there. So it's not that. And I don't know why, to be honest with you, but it does, I believe, play in the development of one's consciousness on the left in the United States. And I did want to convey that to the audience of Chileans who were listening.
Well, I can suggest a couple of features, a couple of reasons. One, of course, is the heavy U.S. involvement in planning and supporting that coup and in supporting the regime that came out of it. Not only the torture and the disappearances, but the entire recasting of the economy in a way that was kind of an experiment for what happened then in the US and Britain and the global capitalist elite. This was the proving grounds for neoliberal capitalism and ended up making Chile into one of the most unequal countries in the entire world.
Yeah, I mean, I thought about the reasons why, but it was the UNESCO, was the United States any less brutal in Chile than they were in like Guatemala, for instance, you know, or Brazil, Argentina, any of these places, you know, Cuba before Fidel? Like, you know, it's hard for me to discern why Chile, why Allende is a well-known figure just on the U.S. left. I'm not talking about most people in the United States. One of the reasons I posited was that he was in a lot of ways a perfect victim, that he was democratically elected. He took the electoral path, which was not, you know, in that era, wasn't the path that most of the Latin American left was taking, right? Not like now. Now, you very clearly, left movements in Latin America are taking the electoral path, but not then. So the fact that he had taken that path and that the United States still, that fascism ultimately took hold, that might be a reason.
Yeah. And the significance it had for people thinking about what social transformation would be, both in the global South and even here, whether the electoral path was a possibility. One other quick factor was, of course, this was 1973, whereas many of the instances you mentioned came earlier when there was much less of an organized political left movement in this country. I think coming out of the 60s, Allende had more significance here than, for instance, coups against Mossadegh in Iran or Arbenz in Guatemala that happened in the 50s. Anyway, it's worth thinking about the continuing significance of Allende for us. But back to your experience, you were there. The panel that you mentioned was a couple of days before 9/11. What about being there 9/11 that day? What was it like to be in Chile on the 50th anniversary?
Yeah, well, I had taken part of the book fair slash event that the Partido Comunista had organized. But I also was part of two marches. One was in the morning, and that was the one that everybody went to. And so that one was an interesting experience. So right away, before the march even started, there was, it was part of a confrontation with police. So O'Higgins Avenue, which is the main vein of Santiago, it's like closing down, you know, Sunset Avenue in Los Angeles or something like that. It's, you know, it's this huge, really trafficked avenue. They closed it down and people were gathering to start the march. And the police, for whatever reason, had just randomly blockaded the back end, right? Not the part where you're marching forward. They blockaded the back. And so I was just wandering the avenue, taking photos. Again, it's like shutting down such a huge street. And I was like, okay, well, ready to be part of the march soon. And I go to walk up and we saw the blockades there. And so people immediately got pissed because it was, you know, they were understandably confused. It just seemed like there was no reason to block it off. So people started yelling and I was like, okay, well, this is going to get violent pretty soon. But at some point, either somebody forced the blockade open or the gates open or the police had let us in. But that was before the march had even started. And it just kind of went downhill from there. So lots of tear gas, which is fine. It's not the first time getting tear gas, but the water cannons were definitely new. And so anybody who's was part of the George Floyd rebellion in Portland, it was that kind of vibe. So luckily I'd ran into a friend of mine, BJ Prashad, and another Chilean activist that I had known. And, you know, I found a group of people to stick with. The police called Carabineros there. They had just tried to, you know, block off certain parts, have people run in different directions, and really made an effort to disperse the crowd. And so at some point, they blocked us off where we just couldn't continue with the rest of the march, which was unfortunately down to the cemetery where President Allende was buried. So it was interesting, the police tactics that they had used in Chile.
And the point, of course, the police, I don't know whether this is a surprise or not, the police were not in favor of commemorating the coup.
That could certainly be argued. I will say that President Boric, the current president of Chile, he was a part of the march for about 10 minutes and then he left. There's a photo of him at the beginning, right? With a big banner. And it's clear that he is not in charge of the police in Chile, right? The police and the military. And he was never a military guy, right? He's a middle class guy who got elected. So it was clear that probably the reason why he left so early is because he probably didn't want photos of him getting tear gassed by his own police force.
You had another march as well, or another demonstration in Chile that day?
Yes, later that night was the Nunca Más march, and that was mostly women. It was about six, I've heard about 6,000 women all dressed in black, some of which carrying candles. And it was actually a silent march. It was very much a change in tone from the march earlier that day.
And Nunca Más means.
Never again. Never again is part of the movement of women who certainly decried what happened on 9/11 and its outset, but also a movement made up of mothers who still to this day are searching for the bodies of their children who had disappeared. Particularly in the 5 days after the coup, were the most where we saw the most people missing. But yeah, that one was very much a different change of tone, silent march. The police who were there were undercover. They weren't like in full military uniform. You could tell though, because they're terrible at trying to look normal. They all had the same exact black jacket and shiny shoes and perfectly combed hair. But it was peaceful, at least for the time that I was there. I was there for about 3 hours.
This has been Luisa Martinez giving us, I don't know how often Cabo is able to do this, but we have our own foreign correspondent on the scene. So, Luisa, thanks very much. We're glad to have you back here, and we'll do more programs together. That was Luisa Martinez. This is Norm Diamond talking about her experience in Chile on the commemoration, the 50th anniversary of the coup and the rise of fascism in Chile, the coup against Allende. One of the things Luisa saw in roaming around Santiago were posters everywhere for a new film. The film is by Pablo Larraín. It's on Netflix, available in this country. Came out to coincide with that 50th anniversary, 50th commemoration of the coup by General Pinochet and the military against Salvador Allende. The film is called El Conde. El Conde in English is the Count. And the Count, it was Pinochet's nickname. Augusto Pinochet died in 2006, at the time facing punishment for everything he did in Chile, for the coup, for the dictatorship, for the torture, the disappearances, for the money that he stole and his family stole, and probably wasn't going to be punished for this, but of course, for the egregious introduction of capitalist neoliberalism into Chile that we just talked about in the interview with Luisa. The plot of the film says he didn't actually die, he faked his death. He is still a presence, is the point that the film is trying to make. He's still a presence in Chile, which he very much is. But turning him into a vampire. You got the reference right when the film is called The Count, takes him back in time. He's been in service to the ruling class, this film says, for the last 250 years. And it visually reinforces that point by having him as a shadow that persists over Santiago. It has him in full military regalia flying over the city. So the premise is he's insulted by being charged as a thief, and he decides finally that he wants to die. His family arrives. They've done extremely well, of course, under his rule. They gathered the spoils. But now, if he wants to die, they want to figure out where all the loot is hid. I will add parenthetically that investigators, this isn't part of the film, investigators have traced tens of millions of dollars to hundreds of bank accounts in that he set up all around the world. Some of that, of course, does come out in the film. But the family arrives. Along with them comes a young nun. Now she's there as an accountant they can trust, because she's this young person and a religious person, but she has a couple of other agenda items on her own. And one of them is to have an exorcism to get the devil out of this vampire that is Pinochet. And second, she's there with a secret mission from the Catholic Church in Chile to try to gather as much of the loot for them as she can pull off, bearer bonds, things like that. Anything she finds, go back to the church. And then there's a big reveal at the end that I'm not going to tell you right now, but the point of which is that efforts toward fascism in Chile and elsewhere will continue around the world. The film's a clever way of exposing Pinochet's crimes, and some of that is insider stuff. Early on, when he's charged as a vampire centuries before Chile, when he's charged with some crimes before he massacres the people charging him, he says the lines, "I don't remember, but it's not true. And if it is true, I don't remember." Well, for Chileans, that's a reminder. That's exactly what Pinochet said in real life when he was asked, I presume by the court, by the Spanish court that tried him, the judge of which incidentally was on the panel with Luisa in Chile a couple of weeks ago, or a few weeks ago. That's exactly what he said when he was asked, under oath, whether he had headed the secret police. He said, "I don't remember, but it's not true. And if it is true, I don't remember." That was that reference. Beyond that, of course, the nun in her conversations with all the children of the family, in the work that she does as an accountant, uncovers all the corruption, or much of it, the diversion of funds and the killings. And the family members just respond kind of with glee. You get this elite response as they acknowledge they were entitled to all this loot. After all, their father, did this great thing by preventing the rise of any kind of alternative to elite rule. I guess one or two reservations about the film. What do we get when we focus on one person? The problems, of course, in Chile were systemic. It wasn't just that one person made things happen, although perhaps in a literary device, it makes it easy to see the crimes by that focus on one person. What's left out, really, is something that Luisa and I just talked about, and that would be the US role in the coup and in supporting fascism in Chile. That's left out of the film almost entirely. There's a very subtle reference at the very end, as part of this big reveal, when the newly reinvigorated youth vampire that is Pinochet is taken off to school as a child. He's taken off to school now in the present in a school that has the name Escuela de las Américas, School of the Americas, which of course was the US facility at Fort Bragg that trained the Chilean military behind the coup. I've been talking about the film El Conde, a film by Pablo Larraín. It is available now on Netflix. It's not an easy film to watch. It is a spoof. There's humor in it. There's also a lot of gore. Watch it with some discretion, but it's absolutely topical. in how it approaches Chile. This is Norm Diamond with a review of El Conde.